This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
I'll begin with early poems. Tonight all is well. What a terrible future. I'm 23, year of the iron birthday, gate of darkness. I am ill. I have become physically and spiritually impotent in my madness this month. I suddenly realize that my head is severed from my body. I realized it a few nights ago by myself, lying sleepless on the couch. These psalms are the workings of the vision-haunted mind and not that reason which never changes. I am flesh and blood, but my mind is the focus of much lightning. I change with the weather, with the state of my finances, with the work I do, with my company, but truly none of these is accountable for the majestic flaws of mind which have left my brain open to hallucination. All work has been an imitation of the literary cackle in my head. This gossip is an eccentric document to be lost in a library and rediscovered when the dove descends. When I sit before a paper writing, my mind turns in a kind of feminine madness of chatter. But to think, to see outside, in a tenement, the walls of the universe itself, I wait. Wait till the sky appears as it is. Waiting for a moment when the poem itself is my way of speaking out. Not declaiming or celebrating yet, but telling the truth. Today, out of the window, the trees seem like live organisms on the moon. Each bough extended upward, covered at the north end with leaves, like a green hairy protuberance. I saw the scarlet and pink shoot tips of budding leaves wave delicately in the sunlight, blown by the breeze, all the arms of the trees bending and straining downward at once when the wind pushed it. In society, I walked into the cocktail party room and found three or four queers talking together in queer talk. I tried to be friendly, but heard myself talking in hip talk. "I'm glad to see you," he said, and looked away. I mused. The room was small and had a double-decker bed in it and cooking apparatus, icebox, cabinet, toasters, stove. The host seemed to live with room enough only for cooking and sleeping. My remark on this score was understood but not appreciated. I was offered refreshments, which I accepted. I ate a sandwich of pure meat, an enormous sandwich of human flesh. I noticed while I was chewing on it, it also included a dirty asshole. More company came, including a fluffy female who looked like a princess. She glared at me and said immediately, "I don't like you." Turned her head away and refused to be introduced. I said, "What?" in outrage. "Why, you shit-faced fool! You narcissistic bitch! How can you decide when you don't even know me?" I continued in a violent and messianic voice, inspired at last, dominating the whole room. metaphysics. This is the one and only firmament. Therefore, it is the absolute world. There is no other world. The circle is complete. I am living in eternity. The ways of this world are the ways of heaven. Marijuana notation. How sick I am. That thought always comes to me with horror. Is it this strange for everybody? But such fugitive feelings have always been my métier. Baudelaire. Yet he had great joyful moments staring into space, looking into the middle distance, contemplating his image in eternity. They were his moments of identity. It is solitude that produces these thoughts. It is December almost. They are singing Christmas carols in front of the department stores down the block on 14th Street. Bricklayer's Lunch Hour. This is the earliest poem. This is 1946. Two bricklayers are setting the walls of a cellar in a new dugout patch of dirt behind an old house of wood with brown gables grown over with ivy on a shady street in Denver. It is noon, and one of them wanders off. The young subordinate bricklayer sits idly for a few minutes after eating a sandwich and throwing away the paper bag. He has on dungarees and is bare above the waist. He has yellow hair and wears a smudged but still bright red cap on his head. He sits idly on top of the wall on a ladder that is leaned up between his spread thighs, his head bent down, gazing uninterestedly at the paper bag on the grass. He draws his hand across his chest and then slowly rubs his knuckles across the side of his chin and rocks to and fro on the wall. A small cat walks up to him along the top of the wall. He picks it up, takes off his cap, and puts it over the kitten's body for a moment. Meanwhile, it is darkening as if to rain, and the wind on top of the trees in the street comes through almost harshly. Harshly. Meanwhile, it is darkening as if to rain, and the wind on top of the trees in the street comes through almost harshly. How come he got canned at the ribbon factory? This is an attempt to write poetry in journalese completely. Chorus of working girls. The attempt to see myself through the eyes of journalese. There was this character come in to pick up all the broken threads and tie them back into the loom. He thought that this is an actual loom in an actual ribbon factory. This is not a symbolic loom. There was this character come in to pick up all the broken threads and tie them back into the loom. He thought that what he didn't know would do as well as well did, tying threads together with real small knots. So there he was, shivering in his shoes, showing his wish to be a god of all the knots we tendered after suffering to learn them up. But years ago we were employed by Mr. Smith to tie these knots, which it took us all of 6 months to perfect. However, he showed no sign of progress learning how, after 5 weeks of frigid circumstances of his own making, which we made sure he didn't break out of by freezing up on him. Obviously, he wasn't a real man anyway, but a goop. I don't feel like it. It's too goopy. I don't know. I didn't like the sound of that, but a goop. There was this character come in to pick up all the broken threads and tie them back into the loom. He thought that what he didn't know would do as well did, tying threads together with real small knots. So there he was, shivering in his shoes, showing his wish to be a god of all the nuts. We tended, after suffering, to learn them up. But years ago, we were employed by Mr. Smith to tie these nuts, which it took us all of 6 months to perfect. However, he showed no sign of progress learning how. After 5 weeks of frigid circumstance of his own making, which we made sure he didn't break out of by freezing up on him. Obviously, he wasn't a real man anyway, but a goof. No, actually, I didn't really write this poem myself. I was writing a poem about metaphysics or something. And I went to a friend of mine who was a newspaper man and was talking about how to write poetry. And he said, well, why don't you write it like you write anything to me? Or, you know, like you write the story. Or you just write up the story like you're working here in this Rubin factory and you're losing your job. And so he said, now, like, if I were writing it as a newspaper story, I'd say there was this character come in to pick up all the broken threads and tie them back into the loom. And he showed no sign of progress after 5 weeks. So that newspaper East worked in at this point. I think I was in contact with Williams, and so I began to try and combine the what I thought of as the worldly, wise, cynical reality sense with Williams's sense of no ideas but in things or in circumstances or acts or facts, rather than at that time. What I was able to do in this line, which is a different simultaneous with that. No hyacinthine imagination can express this clotting. No, start over. No hyacinthine imagination can express this clock of meat, bleakly pining for its sweet immaterial paradise, which I have celebrated in one gone dithyram after another, and have elevated to that highest place in the mind's angelical empyrean, which shall, in the course of hot centuries to come to be known as the clock of life. The very summa and dove of the unshrouding of finality's joy, whence cometh purely pearly streams of revs and honey thoughts and all like dreamy essences, are our hearts therefrom so filled with such incomparable and crownly creaminess, one never knew whence it came. Whether from those foul regions of the soul the ancients named Malibolge or the Dank, or the icicle-like crystal rose of cloudless sky called Ice Cube or Avenue, whence angels late 14 there convened hang on and raptly gaze on us singing down in mewing voices liturgies of milk and sweet cream, sighing no longer for the strawberries of the world, whence in pain and wit's despair they had ascended stoops of light up the celestial fire escape, no more to suffering sit as we do, one and all. Nor more we shall when the final gate is opened and the diamond seraph armed with 3 forks of lightning, 7 claps of thunder, 11 bursts of laughter, and 1,000 tears rolling down his silken cheeks, bears his radiant breath and asks us in the name of the Lord to share that love in heaven which on earth was so disinherited. The alternative at that point, that time for me, was 2 bricklayers are setting the walls of a cellar in a new dugout patch of... Another journalist the archetype poem, Joe Blow has decided he will no longer be a fairy. He involves himself in various matches and then hits a nut named Mary. He gets in bed with her and performs as what in his mind would be his usual okay job, which should be solid as a rock, but isn't. What goes wrong here, he says to himself. I want to take her, but she doesn't want to take me. I thought I was giving her cock, and she was giving me a man's position in the world. Now suddenly she lays down the law. I'm very tired, she says. Please go. Is this it? He thinks. I didn't want it to come to that, but I've got to get out of this situation. So the question resolves itself. Do you settle for her or go? I wouldn't give you a nickel. You aren't much of a doll anyway. And he picks up his pride, puts on his pants, glad enough to have pants to wear, and goes. Why is it that versions of this lack of communication are universal? I could have left that out, I suppose. But incidentally, this I didn't write either. It was the same newspaper man. I was presenting my problems to him, and he presented them back in newspaperese, which then I altered very slightly to get, I didn't want it to come to that, but I got to get out of this situation. Finally, walking home at night, reaching my own block, I saw the Port Authority building hovering over the old ghetto side of the street I tenement in company with obscure Bartlebys and Judes, cadaverous men, shrouded men, soft, white, fleshed failures creeping in and out of rooms, like myself. Remembering my attic, I reached my hands to my head and hissed, "Oh God, how horrible!" The next obvious step, then, an alba. Now that I've wasted 5 years in Manhattan, life decaying, talent a blank, talking disconnected, patient and mental, slide rule and number, machine on a desk, autograph, triplicate, synopsis and taxes, obedient, prompt, poorly paid, stayed on the market, youth of my 20s, fainted in offices, wept on typewriters, deceived multitudes in vast conspiracies, deodorant battleships, serious business industry, every 6 weeks whoever drank my blood bank, innocent, evil, now part of my system, 5 years unhappy labor, 22 to 27 working, not a dime in the bank to chauffeur it anyway, dawn breaks, it's only the sun, the east smokes, oh my bedroom, I am damned to hell, what? Alarm clock is ringing. So from a preoccupation with what I thought was reality, then a shift to desire or to imagination with a green automobile. If I had a green automobile, I'd go find my old companion in his house on the Western Ocean. I'd honk my horn at his manly gate. Inside, his wife and 3 children sprawl naked on the living room floor. He'd come running out to my car full of heroic beer and jump screaming at the wheel, for he is the greater driver. We'd pilgrimage to the highest mount of our earlier Rocky Mountain visions, laughing in each other's arms, delight surpassing the highest Rockies. And after old agony, drunk with New Year's, bounding toward the snowy horizon, blasting the dashboard with original bop, hot rod on the mountain, we'd batter up the cloudy highway where angels of anxiety careen through the trees and scream out of the engine. We'd burn all night on the jack pine peak top seen from Denver in the summer dark, forest-like unnatural radiance illuminating the mountain top. Childhood, youth time, age, and eternity would open like sweet trees in the nights of another spring, and dumbfound us with love, for we can see together the beauty of souls hidden like diamonds in the clock of the world. Like Chinese magicians can confound the immortals with our intellectuality hidden in the mist, in the green automobile which I have invented, imagined, and visioned on the roads of the world, more real than the engine on a track in the desert, purer than greyhound and swifter than physical jet plane. Denver, Denver, will return. roaring across the city and county building lawn, which catches the pure emerald flame streaming in the wake of our auto. This time we'll buy up the city. I cashed a great check in my skull bank to found a miraculous college of the body up on the bus terminal roof. But first, we'll drive the stations of downtown, pool hall, flop house, jazz joint, jail, whorehouse, down Folsom to the darkest alleys of Larimer, paying respects to Denver's father, lost on the railroad tracks, stupor of wine and silence hallowing the slum of his decades. Salute him and his saintly suitcase of dark muscatel, drink and smash the sweet bottles on Diesel's in allegiance. Then we go driving drunk on boulevards where armies march and still parade, staggering under their invisible banner of reality. Hurtling through the street in the auto of our fate, we share an archangelic cigarette and tell each other's fortunes, fames of supernatural illumination, bleak, rainy gaps of time, great art learned in desolation, and we beat apart after 6 decades, and on an asphalt crossroad deal with each other in princely gentleness once more, recalling famous dead talks of other cities. Windshields full of tears, rain wets our naked breasts, we kneel together in the shade amid the traffic of night in paradise, and now renew the solitary vow we made each other take in Texas once. I can't inscribe here. How many Saturday nights will be made drunken by this legend? How will young Denver come to mourn her forgotten sexual angel? How many boys will strike the black piano in imitation of the excess of a native saint? Or girls fall wanton under his specter in the high schools of melancholy night? While all the time, in eternity, in the wan light of this poem's radio, we'll sit behind forgotten shades, hearkening the lost jazz of all Saturdays. Neil will be real heroes now, in a war between our cocks and time. Let's be the angels of the world's desire and take the world to bed with us before we die. Sleeping alone or with companion, girl or fairy, sheep or dream, I'll fail of lack love. You, satiety, all men fall, our fathers fell before. But resurrecting that lost flesh is but a moment's work of mind, an ageless monument to love in the imagination, memorial built out of our own bodies consumed by the invisible poem. We'll shudder in Denver and endure, though blood and wrinkles blind our eyes. So this green automobile, I give you in flight a present from my imagination. We will go riding over the Rockies. We'll go on riding all night long until dawn. Then back to your railroad, the SP, your house and your children and broken leg destiny, you'll ride down the plains in the morning. And back to my visions, my office and eastern apartment, I'll return to New York. That's 1953. more imagination. Love poem on theme by Whitman the next year. I'll go into the bedroom silently and lie down between the bridegroom and the bride. Those bodies fallen from heaven, stretched out, waiting, naked and restless, arms resting over their eyes in the darkness. Bury my face in their shoulders and breasts, breathing their skin, and stroke and kiss neck and mouth, and make back be open and known. Legs raised up, crooked to receive, cock in the darkness, driven, tormented, and attacking, roused up from hole to itching head, bodies locked, shuddering, naked, hot hips and buttocks screwed into each other, and eyes glinting and charming, widening into looks and abandon, and moans of movement, voices, hands in hair, hands between thighs, hands in moisture on softened lips, throbbing contraction of bellies till the white cum flow in the swirling sheets, and the bride cry for forgiveness, and the groom be covered with tears of passion and compassion, and I rise up from the bed replenished with last intimate gestures and kisses of farewell, all before the mind wakes, behind shades and closed doors in a darkened house, where the inhabitants roam unsatisfied in the night, nude ghosts seeking each other out in the silence. Something similar to that same year, more vague, but here beginning to, this is one of the, I was talking in my class today about getting the line, well, my difficulty with getting the line of the poem into contact with the physiological breath and the physiological emotion. Here is a poem where it has some of that, but unfortunately the imagery is kind of vague, but the movement of it is all right. The weight of the world is love. Under the burden of solitude, under the burden of dissatisfaction, the weight we carry is love. Who can deny? In dreams, it touches the body. In thought, constructs a miracle. In imagination, anguishes until born in human, looks out of the heart, burning with purity, for the burden of life is love. But we carry the weight wearily, and so must rest in the arms of love at last. Must rest in the arms of love. No rest without love. No sleep without dreams of love. Be mad or chill, obsessed with angels or machines, the final wish is love. Cannot be bitter, cannot deny, cannot withhold if denied. The weight is too heavy. Must give for no return, as thought is given in solitude in all the excellence of its excess. The warm bodies shine together in the darkness. The hand moves to the center of the flesh. The skin trembles in happiness, and the soul comes joyful to the eye. Yes, yes, that's what I wanted. I always wanted to return to the body where I was born. I was saying the imagery was vague, and it is, but what interested me in the poem, and the reason I published it was, yes, yes, that's what I wanted. I always wanted, began to approximate something that sounded like a natural, emotional, feeling, full sound. Excitement 1956, this was sort of an appendage to Howl, which never got published until much later. And it didn't belong, actually. So. Now to the come of the poem. Let me be worthy and sing holily the natural pathos of the human soul. Naked, original skin beneath our dreams and robes of thought, the perfect self-identity, radiant with lusts and intellectual faces. Who carries the lines, the painful browed contortions of the upper eyes, the whole body breathing and sentient among flowers and buildings, open-eyed, self-knowing, trembling with love. Soul that I have, that Jack has, Hunky has, Bill had, Joan had, and has in me memory yet. Bum has in rags, madman underneath black clothes. Soul identical, each to each, as standing on the street corner 10 years ago, I looked at Jack and told him we were the same person. Look in my eyes and speak to yourself. That makes me everybody's lover. Hal, mine against his will. I had his soul in my own body already while he frowned. By the street lamp, 8th Avenue and 27th Street, 1947. I had just come back from Africa with a gleam of the illumination actually to come to me in time as come to all. Jack, the worst murderer. Alan, the most cowardly, with a streak of yellow love running through my poems, a fag in the city. Joe Army screaming in anguish in Dannemora, 1945 jailhouse. Breaking his own white knuckle against the bars, his dumb, sad cellmate beaten by the guards in iron floor below, Gregory weeping in tombs, Joan lidded under eyes of Benzedrine, hearkening to the paranoias in the wall, Hunky from Chicago dreaming in arcades of hellish Pocorino, blue-skinned Times Square light, Bill King yelling pale-faced in the subway window, final minute, gate death, struggling to return, morphing himself, arch suicide, expiring in blood on the Passaic, tragic and bewildered in last tears, attaining death that moment, human, intellectual, bearded, who else was he then but himself? Next on that, in that series was Hal. That's kind of long to read. I don't mind reading as long as I don't have to get emotional about it. What time is it? Pardon me? So I'll read it until I get bugged or bored. I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving, hysterical, naked, dragging themselves through the Negro streets at dawn, looking for an angry fix. Angel-headed hipsters burning for the ancient heavenly connection to the starry dynamo in the machinery of night. Who poverty and tatters and hollow-eyed and high sat up smoking in the supernatural darkness of cold water flats, floating across the tops of cities contemplating jazz. Who bared their brains to heaven under the L and saw Mohammedan angels staggering on tenement roofs illuminated. Actually, I don't want to read that. I said, well, I should. Fuck you. Yeah, I'm hung up on that. I was just trying to be nice. So. No, actually, I thought I might be able to make it, but I can't. Transcription of organ music. That follows from some of the earlier poems. Sounds reading from Empty Mirror. Am I doing right, Ralph? Is that all right? Okay. Probably going to mock me. All right. There are no hells. That was abolished. That's what hell I would have said. That. The flour in the glass peanut bottle, formerly in the kitchen, crooked to take a place in the light. The closet door opened because I used it before. It kindly stayed open, waiting for me, its owner. I began to feel my misery in pallet on floor, listening to music, my misery. That's why I want to sing. The room closed down on me. I expected the presence of the Creator. I saw my gray painted walls and ceiling that contained my room, that contained me, as the sky contained my garden. I opened my door. The rambler vine climbed up the cottage post. The leaves in the night, still, where the day had placed them. The animal heads of the flowers where they had arisen to think at the sun. Can I bring back the words? Will thought of conscription haze my mental open eye? A kindly search for growth, the gracious desire to exist of the flowers, my near ecstasy at existing among them, the privilege to witness my existence. You too must seek the sun. My books piled up before me for my use, waiting in space where I placed them. They haven't disappeared. Time left its remnants and qualities for me to use. My words piled up, my texts, my manuscripts, my loves. I had a moment of clarity, saw the feeling in the heart of things, walked out to the garden, crying, saw the red blossom in the night light, sun's gone. They had all grown in a moment and were waiting, stopped in time, for the day sun to come and give them flowers, which, as in a dream at sunset, I watered faithfully, not knowing how much I loved them. I am so lonely in my glory, except they too out there. I looked up, those red bush blossoms beckoning and peering in the window, waiting in blind love. Their leaves too have hope and are upturned, top flat to the sky to receive, all creation open to receive, the flat earth itself. The music descends, as does the tall, bending stalk of the heavy blossom, because it has to stay alive, to continue to the last drop of joy. The world knows the love that's in its breast, as in the flower, the suffering, lonely world. The Father is merciful. The light socket is crudely attached to the ceiling after the house was built to receive a plug which sticks in it all right and serves my phonograph now. The closet door is open for me where I left it. Since I left it open, it has graciously stayed open. The kitchen has no door. The whole lair will admit me should I wish to enter the kitchen. I remember when I first got laid. H.P. graciously took my cherry. I sat on the docks of Provincetown, age 23, joyful, elevated in hope with a father. The door to the womb was open to admit me if I wish to enter. There are unused electricity plugs all over the house if I ever need them. The kitchen window is open to admit air. The telephone, sad to relate, sits on the floor. I haven't the money to get it connected. I want people to bow as they see me and say, he is gifted with poetry. He has seen the presence of the Creator. And the Creator gave me a shot of his presence to gratify my wish, so as not to cheat me of my yearning for him. Sunflower Sutra. Here I began to attempt to combine The early newspaper-y journalistic preoccupation with facts from William Carlos Williams, with Kerouac's idea of fast, emotive writing, with my own Hebrew soul. I walked on the banks of the Tin Can Banana Dock and sat down under the huge shade of a Southern Pacific locomotive to look at the sunset over the Boxhouse Hills and cry. Jack Kerouac sat beside me on a busted, rusty iron pole. Companion, we thought the same thoughts of the soul, bleak and blue and sad-eyed, surrounded by the gnarled steel roots of trees of machinery. The oily water on the river mirrored the red sky. Sun sank on top of final Frisco peaks. No fish in that stream, no hermit in those mounts, just ourselves, roomy-eyed and hungover like old bums on the riverbank, tired and wily. Look at the sunflower, he said. There was a dead gray shadow against the sky, big as a man, sitting dry on top of a pile of ancient sawdust. I rushed up and chanted. It was my first sunflower, memories of Blake, my vision, Harlem, and hells of the eastern rivers, bridges clanking Joe's greasy sandwiches, dead baby carriages, black treadless tires forgotten and unretreaded, the poem of the riverbank, condoms and pots, steel knives, nothing stainless, only the dank muck and the razor-sharp artifacts passing into the past, and the gray sunflower poised against the sunset, crackly, bleak, and dusty with the smut and smog and smoke of olden locomotives in its eye, corolla of bleary spikes pushed down and broken like a battered crown, seeds fallen out of its face, soon to be toothless mouth of sunny air, sun rays obliterated on its hairy head like a dried wire spider web, leaves stuck out like arms out of the stem, gestures from the sawdust root, broke pieces of plaster fallen out of the black twigs, a dead fly in its ear. Unholy, battered old thing you were, my sunflower, oh my soul, I loved you then. The grime was no man's grime, but death and human locomotives. All that dress of dust, that veil of darkened railroad skin, that smog of cheek, that eyelid of black misery, that sooty hand or phallus or protuberance of artificial worse than dirt, industrial, modern, all that civilization spotting your crazy golden crown, and those blear thoughts of death and dusty, loveless eyes and ends and withered roots below in the home pile of sand and sawdust, rubber dollar bills, skin of machinery, the guts and innards of the weeping, coughing car, the empty, lonely tin cans with their rusty tongues, alack, what more could I name? The smoked ashes of some cock cigar, the cunts of wheelbarrows and the milky breasts of cars, worn out asses out of chairs and sphincters of dynamos, all these entangled in your roots, and you there standing before me in the sunset, all your glory and your form. A perfect beauty of a sunflower. A perfect, excellent, lovely sunflower existence. A sweet, natural eye to the new, hip moon. Woke up alive and excited, grasping in the sunset, shadow, sunrise, golden, monthly breeze. How many flies buzzed round you, innocent of your grime, while you cursed the heavens of the railroad and your flower soul. Poor dead flower, when did you forget you were a flower? When did you look at your skin and decide you were an impotent, dirty old locomotive, the ghost of a locomotive, the specter and shade of a once powerful, mad American locomotive? You were never no locomotive, sunflower. You were a sunflower. And you, locomotive, you are a locomotive. Forget me not. So I grabbed up the skeleton-thick sunflower and stuck it at my side like a scepter. And deliver my sermon to my soul, and Jack's soul too, and anyone who'll listen. We're not our skin of grime. We're not dread, bleak, dusty, imageless locomotive. We're all beautiful golden sunflowers inside. We're blessed by our own seed, and golden, hairy, naked, accomplishment bodies, growing in the mad, black, formal sunflowers in the sunset, spied on by our eyes. under the shadow of the mad locomotive, riverbank, sunset, Frisco, hilly, tin can, evening, sit down, vision. Vocabulary or something about sunflowers. At that point, I ran into Ron Lowenson, who was a younger poet, who had I had talked to before and was trying to explain Williams's conception of what I thought was Williams's conception of imagism to him. So he had come back from a hitchhiking trip and written a poem about a diner in Oklahoma, or a waitress in a diner in Oklahoma, which was so natural that I realized that I was not actually writing about my immediate surroundings. At the time, I was working in the baggage room at Greyhound, so I tried to compose out of the elements there, sort of going back, in a sense, to 1930s proletarian sense, and to Williams's Patterson-esque detail, just simply to look around where I was in a circumstance that was, at that time, to my mind, not particularly poetic. I mean, I realized it was poetic, but I hadn't realized it really to write about it. In the depths of the Greyhound terminal, sitting dumbly on a baggage truck, looking at the sky, waiting for the Los Angeles Express to depart, worrying about eternity over the post office roof in the nighttime, red downtown heaven, staring through my eyeglasses, I realized, shuddering, these thoughts were not eternity, nor the poverty of our lives, irritable baggage clerks, nor the millions of weeping relatives surrounding the buses waving goodbye, nor other millions of the poor rushing around from city to city to see their loved ones, nor an Indian dead with fright talking to a huge cop by the Coke machine, nor this trembling old lady with a cane taking the last trip of her life, nor the red-capped, cynical porter collecting his quarters and smiling over the smashed baggage, nor me looking around at the horrible dream, nor mustached Negro operating clerk named Spade dealing out with his marvelous long hand the fate of thousands of express packages, nor Fairy Sam in the basement limping from leaden trunk to trunk, nor Joe at the counter with his nervous breakdown smiling cowardly at the customers, nor the grayish-green whale stomach interior loft where we keep the baggage in hideous racks, hundreds of suitcases full of tragedy rocking back and forth waiting to be opened, nor the baggage that's lost, nor damaged handles, nameplates vanished, busted wires and broken ropes, whole trunks exploding on the concrete floor, nor sea bags emptied into the night in the final warehouse. Yet, Spade reminded me of Angel, unloading a bus, dressed in blue overalls, black face, official Angel's workman cap, pushing with his belly a huge tin horse piled high with black baggage, looking up as he passed the yellow light bulb of the loft and holding high on his arm an iron shepherd's crook. It was the racks, I realized, sitting myself on top of them now, as is my wont at lunchtime to rest my tired foot. It was the racks, great wooden shelves and stanchions, posts and beams, assembled floor to roof, jumbled with baggage. The Japanese white metal post-war trunk, gaudily flowered and headed for Fort Bragg. One Mexican green paper package and purple rope adorned with names for Nogales. Hundreds of radiators, all at once for Eureka. Crates of Hawaiian underwear. Rolls of posters scattered over the peninsula, nuts to Sacramento, one human eye for Napa, an aluminum box of human blood for Stockton, and a little red package of teeth for Calistoga. It was the racks, and these on the racks I saw naked in electric light the night before I quit. The racks were created to hang our possessions, to keep us together, a temporary shift in space, God's only way of building the rickety structure of time. to hold the bags, to send on the road, to carry our luggage from place to place, looking for a bus to ride us back home to eternity where the heart was left and farewell tears began. A swarm of baggage sitting by the counter as a transcontinental bus pulls in. The clock registering 12:15 a.m., May 9, 1956. The second hand moving forward, red. Getting ready to load my last bus. Farewell, Walnut Creek, Richmond, Vallejo, Portland, Pacific Highway, fleet-footed Quicksilver, god of transience. One last package sits lone at midnight, sticking up out of the coast rack, high as the dusty fluorescent light. The wage they pay us is too low to live on. Tragedy reduced to numbers. This for the poor shepherds. I am a communist. Farewell, ye greyhounds, where I suffered so much. Hurt my knee and scraped my hand and built my pectoral muscles big as vagina. Well, that's a bit cute. Leaving there, you're back getting sad again, aren't you? All afternoon in a strange new cottage in Berkeley. All afternoon, cutting bramble. You know, I read. There's two poems that are connected. These are both written on the same day as part of the same poem. No. All afternoon, cutting bramble blackberries off a tottering brown fence, under a low branch, with its rotten old apricots miscellaneous under the leaves, fixing the drip in the intricate gut machinery of a new toilet, found a good coffee pot in the vines by the porch, rolled a big tire out of the scarlet bushes, hid my marijuana, wet the flowers, playing the sunlit water each to each, returning for godly extra drops for the string beans and daisies. Three times walked round the grass and sighed absently. My reward, when the garden fed me its plums from the form of a small tree in the corner, an angel thoughtful of my stomach and my dry and lovelorn tongue. Psalm 3. The other I read before was Psalm 2. This may be 8 years later. Psalm 3 to God. I was using that name. To illuminate all men, beginning with Skid Row. Let Occidental and Washington be transformed into a higher place, the Plaza of Eternity. Illuminate the welders in shipyards with the brilliance of their torches. Let the crane operator lift up his arm for joy. Let elevators creak and speak, ascending and descending in awe. Let the mercy of the flower's direction beckon in the eye. Let the straight flower bespeak its purpose in straightness to seek the light. Let the crooked flower bespeak its purpose in crookedness to seek the light. Let crookedness and straightness bespeak the light. Let Puget Sound be a blast of light. I feed on your name like a cockroach on a crumb, but this cockroach is holy. Tears. Now, this is about as low as I got. I'm crying all the time now. I cried all over the street when I left the Seattle Wobbly Hall. I cried listening to Bach. I cried looking at the happy flowers in my backyard. I cried at the sadness of the middle-aged trees. Happiness exists. I feel it. I cried for my soul. I cried for the world's soul. The world has a beautiful soul. God appearing to be seen and cried over. Overflowing heart of Patterson. Oh. Back on Times Square. Dreaming of Times Square. Let some sad trumpeter stand on the empty streets at dawn and blow a silver chorus to the buildings of Times Square, memorial of 10 years, at 5 a.m., with a thin white moon just visible above the green and glooking McGraw-Hill offices. A cop walks by, but he's invisible with his music. The Globe Hotel. Garver lay in gray bed there and hunched his back and cleaned his needles. Where I lay many nights on the nod from his bloody leftover cottons and dreamed of Blake's voice talking. I was lonely. Garver's dead in Mexico 2 years. Hotel's vanished into a parking lot, and I'm back here sitting on the streets again. The movies took our language, the great red sign, a double bill of gassers, teenage nightmare, hooligans of the moon. But we were never nightmare hooligans, but seekers of the blonde nose for truth. Some old men are still alive, but the old junkies are gone. We are a legend, invisible, but legendary as prophesied. Sometimes, my sad self, a poem called My Sad Self, 1958. Sometimes when my eyes are red, I go up on top of the RCA building and gaze at my world, Manhattan, my buildings, streets I've done feet in, lofts, beds, cold water flats, on Fifth Avenue below, which I also bear in mind, is ant cars, little yellow taxis, men walking the size of specks of wool, panorama of the bridges, sunrise over Brooklyn Machine, sun go down over New Jersey where I was born, and Patterson where I played with ants, my later loves on 15th Street, my greater loves of Lower East Side, my once fabulous amours in the Bronx, far away. Paths crossing in all these hidden streets, my history summed up, my absences and ecstasies in Harlem, sun shining down on all I own in one eye blink to the horizon in my last eternity. Matter is water. Sad. I take the elevator and go down, pondering, and walk on the pavement, staring into all man's plate glass faces, questioning after who loves, and stop, bemused, in front of an automobile shop window, standing lost in calm thought, traffic moving up and down Fifth Avenue, blocks behind me, waiting for a moment when... Time to go home and cook supper and listen to the romantic warnings on the radio. All movement stops, and I walk in the timeless sadness of existence, tenderness flowing through the buildings, my fingertips touching reality's face, my own face streaked with tears in the mirror of some window at dusk, where I have no desire for bonbons or to own the dresses or Japanese lampshades of intellection. Confused by the spectacle around me, man struggling up the street with packages, newspapers, ties, beautiful suits toward his desire. Man, woman streaming over the pavements, red lights clocking hurried watches and movements at the curb, and all these streets leading so crosswise, honking lengthily by avenues stalked by high buildings or crusted into slums through such halting traffic. Screaming cars and engines so painfully to this countryside, this graveyard, this stillness on deathbed or mountain, once seen, never regained or desired in the mind to come, where all Manhattan that I've seen must disappear. To an old poet in Peru. I mentioned the names of various cities which are pre-Incaic, cultures of coastal desert Peru, where there are many relics, which are found by grave robbers who open the sand in the desert of these necropolises and take out souvenirs, pots and skulls, hair. Chancay, Pachacama, Nazca, they're all clustered around Lima, Peru. I saw an old poet in Peru named Martin Nadan, who was like an old reprobate poet, not exactly a Maxwell Bodenheim. He was a very great son of Peter, actually. Now an old lush. He didn't hang around the literary crowd, but made it in a bar next door to the presidential palace, which was just seized 2 months ago by the Peruvian military. Because we met at dusk, under the shadow of the railroad station clock, while my shade was visiting Lima, and your ghost was dying in Lima, old face needing a shave, and my young beard sprouted magnificent as the dead hair in the sands of Chancay, because I mistakenly thought you were melancholy, saluting your 60-year-old feet which smell of the death of spiders on the pavement, and you saluted my eyes with your anisetto voice, mistakenly thinking I was genial for a youth. My rock and roll is the motion of an angel flying in a modern city. Your obscure shuffle is the motion of a seraphim that has lost its wings. I kiss you on your fat cheek once more tomorrow under the stupendous Desaguadero's clock before I go to my death in an aeroplane crash in North America long ago, and you go to your heart attack on an indifferent street in South America, both surrounded by screaming communists with flowers in their ass. You, much sooner than I, or a long night, alone in a room in the old hotel of the world, watching a black door surrounded by scraps of paper. Die greatly in thy solitude, old man, I prophesy reward. Vaster than the sands of Pachacamac, brighter than a mask of hammered gold, sweeter than the joy of armies naked fucking on the battlefield, swifter than a time passed between old Nazca night and new Lima in the dust, stranger than our meeting by the presidential palace in an old cafe, ghosts of an old illusion, ghosts of indifferent love. The dazzling intelligence migrates from death to make a sign of life again to you, fierce and beautiful as a car crash in the Plaza de Armas. I swear that I have seen that light. I will not fail to kiss your hideous cheek when your coffin's closed and the human mourners go back to their old tired dream. And you wake in the eye of the dictator of the universe? Oh, another stupid miracle. I'm mistaken again. Your indifference, my enthusiasm, I insist, you cough, lost in the wave of gold that flows through the cosmos. Ah, I'm tired of insisting. I'm tired of insisting. Goodbye. I'm going to Pucallpa to have vision. Your clean sonnet? I want to read your dirtiest secret scribblings, your hope, in his most obscene magnificence. My God.